Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio show. Continuing with our series, A New Year, A New You, my guest this morning is Patty Chang Anker. After a lifetime of living nowhere near the edge, Patty, a former director of media relations for the New York Times and a veteran book publicist, had enough. Declaring a year of saying yes to things that frightened her, she launched a blog, Facing 40 Upside Down, which is featured in this month's Good Housekeeping magazine. Patty and I will be discussing about her life's transforming blog, her current mission, and the power from within. Good morning, Patty. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
Good morning, Johnny. Thank you so much for having me. I'm doing wonderfully.
Wonderful. I'm excited to have you on the show this morning. Congratulations on the success of your blog.
Thank you so much.
Let us start by getting to know a little bit more about you as a person, as a mom, and let us know about how you grew up.
Okay, let's see. I was born on the 4th of July in Missouri.
That's a good date, by the way.
It's a great date, unless your family then moves to Canada, in which case it doesn't get you anything. I was born to my mom and dad, who immigrated to the United States from China. They came here for graduate studies. And because my dad was in academia, we moved around quite a bit. So we spent some time in Canada. And then they came to New York to be closer to family. And from there, I was about 10 years old, we stayed put. I was very academically oriented, very fearful in other environments, but felt quite comfortable in a library. And I ended up pursuing a career in book publishing. So I spent most of my 20s working on my career. When I was 31, we adopted our daughter from China, and that was a huge life-changing experience. And I decided to stay at home with her. Around that time, I became a yoga teacher. And life became very full and very challenging, and I felt like it was kind of racing away from me. When I turned 39, I decided to set some clear goals for myself and put it all down in a blog. I figured if I didn't write it down and declare it in front of other people, it would just be one other thing that would just be, you know, long gone in my rearview mirror. So I decided to really try to remember the key moments and put it out there and share them. And it's turned into a wonderful community. It's been a great way to get support from other people, to meet new people, to stretch myself. And so now it's the blog is called Facing 40 Upside Down, but I'm interpreting the number 40 loosely.
Well, let's go back to your childhood years. I mean, you're first generation Chinese growing up in the heartland of the United States, in Missouri in this case. And, of course, you said you guys went to Canada afterwards?
Yes, yes. So I was don't have clear memories of Missouri, but I do have clear memories of Canada. We were in Ottawa and in Toronto. And my parents always chose to stay in suburbs where we might be the only Chinese family in the area. So I learned to assimilate pretty easily.
That's interesting because a lot of times when Asian people come to United States, they tend to congregate among themselves. And what you just mentioned reminded me of what my own career guidance counselor told me a long time ago when I was in Malaysia, because I came here to go to college at LSU. And one of the things he told me, and here's someone who has never been anywhere, but it was fascinating because he told me, he said, Johnny, if you go to the United States and if you decide to hang out in Chinatown or, say, around the Malaysian community and everything else, then don't go. Just stay in Malaysia. Everything you would want to learn will eventually trickle down to Malaysia. But as you go to a different country, in this case, United States, then be around people. Be around the entire culture because you want to assimilate to it and combine the two worlds together and create a third culture. And this is not saying anything bad about people, how they live their lives, but it's fascinating that your parents had the foresight to do that.
Yes, my parents were extremely courageous. When I think about what they did, coming over here without family, it being a second language, earning their their keep, earning their degrees.
Right.
And their goals for us were always that we would be able to succeed over here. And so in order to do that, they just wanted us to really be able to feel very comfortable in the culture. And so my dad himself, he said that in graduate student housing, it's like he could have chosen to live just with other foreign students, but he really wanted to mix with the natives, and he would have people correct his spelling and practice conversation with him. It was really, they're always an inspiration to me.
Are there any other siblings?
Yes, I have one wonderful younger sister. I have to stop myself from saying baby sister.
Is she into writing as well, or is she into something totally different?
Oh, my younger sister is a reading specialist and a wonderful teacher, and I feel like I learn from her all the time. She is the mother of two beautiful twins, and so together we go through a lot of the ups and downs of parenting and of sorting through, what we learned from our parents, how we want to be as parents, what we want to pass on. I'm really fortunate to have such great company on the road.
Is she here in the United States or in Canada?
Oh, she's 10 minutes away from me. We never want to be too far away from each other.
Very interesting. And how about your parents? Are they close to you guys too, or
they're 12 minutes away from me.
My God! So you see, you guys are forming a community there. That sounds wonderful. Well, let's go back to living life. What are some of the major turning points in your life that led you to be the person you are today? For example, I know that you have done a lot of things professionally, but I'm sure, as you know, as we go through life, there's certain things that happen that sort of triggered us in a different direction. So please share with us some of those.
I think that the major turning point for me was when we adopted our older daughter. Up until that point, I had been really defined by my work. I loved my work. I was promoting some of the best writers and journalists out there. I'm a very passionate person, and when someone has an important message that you want to get out to the world, I would be tireless in trying to spread the word for them. But it's something that doesn't allow that much energy or brain space left over for other things. When we adopted my daughter, everything shifted for me. Like, it went from being where most of my time was spent in a very intellectual endeavor and on a mass level. Like, I was thinking in terms of how do I get the world to pay attention to this? How does this book become a major bestseller? How do I get everyone on television and radio to be talking about this topic? With a child, none of that matters. With a child, it just becomes one-on-one. And the skills that I needed to develop and hone were very intuitive, very emotional, and physical as well. Around that time, I just realized that this was a part of myself that had never really been tapped or developed. And I decided to really throw myself into it. Around that time, I also became a yoga teacher. And working with my students and working with my children have also brought that out in me. You know, the idea of really being fully present in the moment with the person that you're with, being able to pay attention to where they're at, what their needs might be, and helping people get to the next stage, get to the next level. It's so exciting when you work with kids because they're learning and growing all the time. And when I teach children with special needs and when I teach adults, I get to see that happen. And it's very exciting also when you see it in adults because I think a lot of adults feel like, oh, they're done learning. And that's, that's a terrible mistake. Like, there's so much to learn. There's so much to get excited about. And when you're able to spark that in people, it's really exciting. So today I feel like with my various interests with yoga and with books and reading and reaching out to people, building communities, I get to draw on the skills from my career and from my parenting. And I'm starting to find a little bit more of a balance in what I can bring to the world.
Very interesting. What is the inspiration behind Facing 40 Upside Down?
Well, apart from like the huge oncoming truck that I was facing in turning 40, I think a major inspiration for it was that as my kids were learning and growing and I was encouraging them to try new things, I realized that I don't try a lot of new things.
Mm-hmm.
I had let myself settle into this pattern where, mommy doesn't do that. And when there's a three-year-old, my three-year-old specifically, wearing a bike helmet, looking at me and saying, why doesn't mommy have a bike?
Mm-hmm.
I had no good answer. I was saying, well, mommy doesn't ride a bike. And I realized it's like, I have hopefully a lot more time on this earth. Do I want to spend it, sitting back
right.
and saying I don't know how and I'm too tired to try and it's too late for me to learn? I decided, no, I want to get out there. And I can't legitimately tell my students, go ahead, try. I believe in you. I believe that you're going to be able to do it and you're going to feel so good after. I couldn't legitimately say that to them if I was too scared. My older daughter was at a therapeutic camp and they wanted her to jump off a diving board and she was too scared to do it. And meanwhile, I was too scared to jump off a diving board. So I decided that if I was going to ask them to do it, I was going to have to walk the walk and not just
right.
talk the talk. And by doing it on a blog and doing it publicly and declaring it, it was on the record. So that way I had a lot of people keeping tabs on me and who could say, did you do it yet? Did you do it yet? and it's honestly, scary to put yourself out there like that, but it keeps you honest.
Right.
I couldn't just get away with being like, oh, I didn't have time. I couldn't get around to it. I made time so that I could do it and feel proud. And once you have that experience, it's like, oh, I'm even more incentivized to get my students and my kids to feel
right.
that feeling.
What I see about Facing 40, you simply have two parts. One is all about you because you are going on a voyage of self-discovery and saying, hey, I'm at a certain point in my life here. Where do I go? And then the other side of the equation is your children, because how do you get them to do something? And when they honestly, innocently question you, well, how come you're not into it? Or lead by example, I guess, in this case. So that poses a dilemma, I guess, in some way. So please share some of your thoughts about that, because I know you mentioned a little bit about it earlier just now. But these are the things that I'm looking at. Am I right in seeing that Facing 40 is actually two parts?
Absolutely. I think that it can be very easy to just have to live through your kids, and I think that we have. In some ways, it's a great luxury that I have in my generation to be able to think about what can I do that would be gratifying and fuel my self-growth and give me energy. I feel like my mother just tirelessly worked for us. And for the next generation, and the feeling that everything we do is for the kids to be able to develop themselves. I think that how I was feeling when I started the blog was very isolated in some ways. The challenges of raising special needs kids can be lonely, and If you get stuck there, and if you start feeling that you're a victim of the circumstances around you, and feeling that life is just going to be like this, every day flying by, you know, too much to do, never being on top of it, you can feel very overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that what I was really grasping for is a sense of empowerment, that I could do some things that I didn't think I could do before. And even if they're small things, like, you know, learning how to dive into a swimming pool, if I could accomplish that, then maybe it would give me the courage to try bigger things.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it would set an example for my kids that the things that they think are really big and scary may not be that big and scary once you actually go in and do it. So it was parallel things going on. Of my concern for them and wanting them to face the world with excitement rather than fear. And for myself, feeling like I need to cheer myself up. I need to give myself energy so that I have more to give to others.
What are some of the fears you have overcome?
Well, I realize that I have a very long list of fears. A friend of mine said, "Patty, I'm afraid you're going to face them all, and then what will you write about?" And I was like, "Oh no, we haven't barely scratched the surface yet." As I mentioned before, when I was growing up, I had a great imagination, and I read a lot of books, and I sort of felt like if I lived vicariously through these characters, then I didn't really need to have to do any of that myself, did I?
Right.
So for me, a lot of the fears I face are physical. I don't like the feeling of falling, of accelerating, of drowning, of being upside down and disoriented. Whenever I go upside down or I start gathering speed, I feel out of control. And so the first challenges I set out for myself were to dive into a swimming pool, to ride a bike without looking like a spaz, and to do a handstand.
Right.
And then along the way, there were all sorts of things that came up. There was boogie boarding and ice skating and a trip that I took without my family, which was a very big fear of mine is, you know, traveling without my job, which is taking care of everybody else. So, yes, those were some of the highlights.
So the scariest fear would be travel?
Oh, the scariest fear. Okay, so in terms of pure peril, life flashing before your eyes, that would have to be my fear of rivers. Rivers are terrible because it's my fear of drowning combined with my fear of gathering speed. So when I was a teenager, I went on this tubing trip that ended terribly for me. I ended up sucked down a tributary away from my friends, and I was alone and terrified and almost drowned. I flipped out of my tube and was hanging on for dear life, and it was really pretty much a miracle that I was able to propel myself out of the river. And for years after that, I would have nightmares of drowning. So I always stayed away from rivers until this year when I said I needed to face my fears and I had the opportunity to go river rafting. And in this case, I had to talk myself, you know, I think your internal monologue can really do you in, because if you go to the place of I'm going to drown. That's all I've ever known. The only experience I've ever had in a river is that it's going to end badly. You have to override that. And instead I was telling myself, this is different. This time you have a helmet. This time you have a life vest. This time you have excellent guides. This time there's a rescue boat. This time you blogged about it so you can't back out. And sure enough, this time was great. It was exhilarating. It was terrifying. But I got out alive and better than just alive. Now I have this in my history. And so when I see a river, I no longer automatically think, you know, river equals drowning. I can think, like, river can equal fun. Why not give it a try?
I read somewhere that you have a fear of camping. Is that correct?
Oh, no. I never should have said that. Now I'm afraid someone's going to make me go do it. Oh, yes, camping. I grew up in the Bronx, so, you know, I am much more comfortable in a city environment. The idea of wilderness is quite frightening to me. Someone said, why? What's there to be afraid of with camping? And I was like, okay, the dark, the bears, the bugs, the the children who won't sleep. I think there are many, many things to be frightened of in camping, and now I can just see it now. My inbox is going to be flooded with people wanting to go.
So that's a new challenge for you. So
we
want to see you go camping. How about some of the other ones that you're working on in overcoming the fear, since you said that you have a list of them? So what are you currently working on?
Currently, at the moment, I'm working on overcoming my fear of being interviewed on talk radio.
You're doing fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you. It's really funny. My entire career was spent encouraging. I say the word encourage with the word courage in the middle, like giving courage to my clients. For them to go out and speak their message and speak their truth. And a lot of the time they would say, you know, I wrote it down already. Do I have to go out and talk about it? And I would say, yes, because people need to hear this. And now it's my turn to do it, and it's actually quite terrifying, but also fun. And I have people who are dying to take me rock climbing, which boy, heights, falling, my palms are sweaty just thinking about it.
Right.
Martial arts. My daughter is really into karate, and her teacher really wants to get me into a class. And I look at them and think, you know, I'm pretty sure I would cry. those are all possibilities.
That's wonderful. That sounds like fun. See, I'm looking at you having your second childhood all over again.
Yes, you
doing
know,
all this fun stuff.
It's funny. I think part of me felt guilty even setting out these goals. You know, who is this woman who has the time? You know, who has the time to do these fun things for herself and the babysitting and the, you know, the energy to do it? And what I realized is that none of these things take that much time. You know, the time and energy it takes to not do things and think of excuses pretty much balances it out. It's like in learning to dive into a swimming pool, which I really wasn't sure I was going to be able to do, it took one 30-minute lesson to dive off the side of the pool and one 30-minute lesson to dive off the board. And so in 60 minutes total, I went from a non-diver to a diver. And the feeling of diving off the, like diving into the swimming pool and coming up for air, and there was a dad with his kid swimming in the lane, and the dad said to the kid, look, it's a diver. And I thought to myself, I just changed something about me profoundly in
That's
30
correct.
Minutes. So it's actually, I think we make things out to be much more undoable and unreachable and not worth the effort than they really are. It's like once you start doing things, it's very addictive. And, you know, better to be addicted to this than to reality TV, although I am a little addicted to reality TV.
Some of them are real and some of them are really not. It is for a show. I mean, even though it's called reality TV, but in real life, I don't think that the Real Housewives of New York live like the Real Housewives of New York on TV, though, you know, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's like the alternate reality show.
There you go. You're right, because I think you change the way you do things and you change your entire perspective and how you feel from within. And that brings me to the next question here, because I think one of the fascinating things that you have done with your life, because being in the corporate world, achieved tremendous amount of success and everything else, and of course you got married, and the decision to actually adopt a couple of children from China. So I look at it from the standpoint of, and you may or may not realize this, but in the course of living your life, you have created this wonderful secret of the balancing act of being a great mother to your children and the personal quest of finding yourself from within. So share with us some of those secrets, if you would.
It is work and it's fun. And I think the balancing act is between the two. You know, I think it can be very easy to get carried away with the work of it all. Every day there's more than can be done. I think the moments that your kids say, you know, please, 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 can we go out in the sled? And you say, you know what? Yes, let's go. And you do it, you build a memory that lasts a lifetime. And that gives you energy to get through, you know, all the other stuff that needs to get done. I think that part of it for me is getting support mm-hmm. and sharing the experience with other people so that you're not doing it all by yourself. And sharing other people's energy and passion for what they're interested in. I think that to do anything alone is much, much harder.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I would say, like, you know, mixing it up all the time and finding the excitement, the genuine mm-hmm. excitement in yourself and in your kids, and then when you have those experiences, really marking them, you know, taking pictures, telling stories about it, reflecting on it, and having those be the history of success that you could look back on, you know, mm-hmm. as you face each challenge that comes up to you.
Where does your husband fit into all this? Is he a great cheerleader?
Absolutely, absolutely. My husband and I, we met in high school and have been lifelong partners in crime. And I feel like we've always been each other's campaign managers, you know. So he's the one who's telling me, you're going to be great on the radio, don't worry. And I need to hear that. It's always been like my, that's what I do. That's what I say to
right,
my clients.
Right.
And that's what I say to my kids. And so who says that to you? I think it's important to find the positive people in your life who can tell you to go for it, and that no matter what happens, they're there for you either way.
Now, on the flip side, when you look at all the things that you mentioned about and reading about your blog and everything else, don't you think perhaps all the above is more about you going through a midlife crisis, perhaps?
Yes, absolutely. oh, was it that obvious? Yeah, you know, when my friends started turning 40, a little bit ahead of me, they started doing crazy things. They, you know, one of them started running marathons. Another mm-hmm. bought a banjo. Another started a business. There was this like restless energy among my friends that they didn't want life to just be what it had been. And mm-hmm. these are people, like, life had been great leading up to that point. Like, they had, you know, gotten their degrees. They'd done well in their careers, married, kids. You know, they'd finally established themselves. And I felt like, why do you want to change things up now? Like, what's this about? And the minute I turned 39, I got it. I understood. You know, it's just this feeling that we have so much inside of us that we want to share with other people and to make a difference. And when you're 20 and you feel like you have your whole life ahead of you, you can waste time. You know, you can sleep in. You can have brunch. You can, and all of a sudden when you're facing 40 and there's so little time because there are so many things you have to do for everyone else, you have so many responsibilities, you wouldn't trade those in. It's a privilege to have kids. It's a privilege to have a job. So all of those things are wonderful. But there's so little time left to think about what changes you could make and what growth could there be that you don't want to waste it. So I think that restlessness for me was fueled into the blog, and it tapped into a bunch of other people who felt the same way. And so that part of it is really exciting. I feel like it helps everyone who's going through this make the most out of their lives at this moment.
Interesting. Have you thought much about the things that you believe you were not able to accomplish in some ways? Because you have a long list, and I'm sure as you put things down and then you say, wow, this is going to be the toughest thing, or maybe I'm not going to be able to accomplish this.
Like handstand, I wasn't able to get it. I worked on it for a year. And it was like 5 days before I was turning 40, and I felt like this may not happen. And part of the yogic practice is being able to sit with any situation and say, this is what it is, and it could go either way, and either way I'm okay. And to be able to say that to yourself over and over again. And the moment in handstand where you're suspended in air is this moment, it's just a leap of faith, and you don't know how it's going to end. I feel like that's the space that I'm working in. And when I'm working with a child who's has anxiety and is afraid to go backwards, and it's like I'm trying to teach them, you know, to come backwards and to feel safe, It's that moment. So yes, I think that all of my goals are things that I don't set things that are completely unrealistic. I set things that I think are achievable, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to achieve them, and I don't know if I'll do it on anyone's timetable. But the point is to try to not let the fear be the thing that stops you, but to be the entry point, that you can step into that fear and sit with it and feel it and be okay with not knowing the outcome. And that's something that you take with you into every part of your life. It's like, how many things do we have invested where you don't know what the outcome is going to be? And to not have your entire identity pinned on, you know, a positive outcome. Sometimes the failure, like the setback, is the thing that you can learn the most from. So these are all things that you want your kids to learn, you want your students to learn. And if you can't do it yourself, then you're missing out on, you know, a great opportunity for growth. So it is like having a second childhood, but it's also like growing up. Does that make sense?
Yeah. A lot of times people don't realize that as a teacher, you are actually a student.
Yes. Yeah, I think the minute you feel that all you have to do is tell people what to do, then you've lost the feeling of what it is to learn. So, I think putting myself in the position of being a student has helped the teaching tremendously.
Tell us a little bit about your work with special needs parents of Tourette syndrome, ADHD, anxiety, sensory issues, and PDD. You are certified in teaching them about yogas and so forth, correct?
Yes, that's right. I became interested in this because my own daughter developed several neurological conditions, and the standard approaches of teaching, you know, typically developing students weren't working well for her. And I think that kids can go a long time feeling that they're failing if there isn't if the approach to them isn't one that works. And I did a wonderful teacher training called Every Kid's Yoga with Craig Hanauer. He developed a yoga program for a school, a special ed school. And when I went to visit his class, I was so moved because every kid in there had their own different abilities and challenges. And every kid was praised for everything that they could do. And the corrections to help them reach to the next level were so positive. It was like, you know, Johnny, I love the way you have the right foot pointing straight forward. Now let's see if you can lift your arms. It was completely different from a typical class where it might just be, everybody lift your arms, everybody lift your arms. Johnny, are you not paying attention? You know, that triggered in me this desire to offer kids with special needs and their parents a chance to see themselves as stars, you know, as kids who are able to do so many things and then reach for the next level. Along the way, I think I went through periods of feeling like I didn't know how to help my kid. And I've met many wonderful professionals. We've worked with a terrific therapeutic camp, the NYU Summer Program for Kids with ADHD. And their practices have really helped inform, you know, how I work with my family and my students. Support groups like the Tourette Syndrome Association has been extremely helpful. They've sent ambassadors into the public school to do in-service training of the teachers. There are a lot of resources out there, and if you're able to tap into them early, you know, so that your child doesn't have years of experience of feeling like they're failing, like they're not able to hack it in the world, right? If you can get in there early and support them in all sorts of ways, I sort of envision my child or any child with special needs, like they're in an ocean and they don't quite know how to swim and their life vest is half inflated. So like they're struggling and just barely, you know, hanging on to the surface. And it's like, what do we do? Like, do we inflate the vest or do we teach them to swim? And it's this balance of, you know, how much help do they need right now? And then when do you back off and let them learn? So it's a very nuanced thing. And in the middle of it, a parent can feel quite helpless. And so I love being able to, you know, be a sounding board and help other parents and, you know, receive lots of help and support and information myself.
Very interesting concept. Coming back to life balance, do you have some practical strategies that you can share with parents or, you know, our listeners this morning about finding that balance about work as well as family? Because I think that's a great challenge now, especially when you have working parents. And many a times the kids are pretty much left on their own. And somehow finding that quality time is far more important than quantity of time.
Yes, I think that's true. I think that if you have, you know, 5 minutes with your child in the morning or at night, if you, you know, take a few deep breaths before that interaction and just make yourself as available as possible in that time, look them in the eye, really listen to what they're saying, like give them a full smile and a big hug, like that's worth a lot more than hours of being with them where you're half paying attention. My kids will sometimes say to me, I hate mommy's phone, and then I realize I need to put it away. Like I need, the BlackBerry needs to go off for a minute. I think the balance is very hard. I do most of my writing late at night when everyone else is asleep. And that sounds really ideal because, oh, great, you know, you can be with your kids all day and then you can work at night. And it works pretty well until I'm really tired and cranky when I'm with my kids. Then I realize, okay, you know what, this has to shift. I need to catch up a little here or there, put off the working until, you know, they can be engaged in an activity. In terms of finding a little bit of peace in your own life, I say, like, look at the little cracks and crevices, you know, like when you're driving in your car. If there is music that puts you in a good mood, like, make sure you have it in your car. Like, I feel like top 40 in the car is terrible because it's full of desire and longing and people not getting what they want and if only you loved me and so, like, find something really uplifting and have it with you. In my car, I always have packed at all times a suitcase with a yoga mat and my altar cloth, and that's because I'm a yoga teacher, so I need it with me. I take it with me where I teach and to my students' houses. But what could you have with you that would inspire you, like when you're sitting in a waiting room? You know, if it's a book that always makes you smile, if it's you know, a memento of some sort that is like when you hold it, you can take 3 deep breaths. Sometimes that's all the time we have, but just taking a little break can affect your mood for the rest of the day.
This brings us to your post titled My Secret Hiding Place, which was featured in Good Housekeeping this month. Please share with us the essence behind this article.
Well, I am sitting in my secret hiding place right now. I'm not going to tell anyone where it is. the story of my secret hiding place is that I'm a yoga teacher, and so everyone would probably think that my life should be, you know, totally peaceful and serene, and my house should be like a retreat, and that's not the case at all. I had a little space in my front room to do yoga, and it got completely taken over by my kids' stuff. So at certain points, it has had a drum set, a trampoline, an air hockey table, stacks of books that need to go back to the library, you know, socks that need to be sorted. It was completely out of control. And I felt like the minute I would walk into the door, stressed. And I was saying to my yoga teacher, you know, it's just too much. It's like I am, short of getting a dumpster outside of my house, I am never going to be able to clear this out. And he said, you know, you don't need much. All you need is a place to sit. And when he said that, I realized, oh, well, yeah, the whole house is too much for me to deal with, but a place to sit I could do. So, like, I had to, you know, unearth underneath all of this stuff. I had my altar, and I set it into a corner and put a candle on it and then just set a cushion right next to it and shielded it with a Japanese screen. And, Johnny, for 2 days, nobody even knew it was there. That's how, like, cluttered the room was. You know, no one even knew it was there. And so I would tiptoe behind the screen and just sit and take deep breaths. It's like,
Mommy disappeared.
Exactly. Yeah, I figured I'd have like five, maybe 10 minutes before the kids would come looking for me. And then this Christmas, this past holiday season, this is where Christmas is always the beginning of the end. It's like the tree goes up, and then the presents get opened, the stockings get dumped out, and then it's just toys everywhere, and like nothing ever leaves. And so this time I was like, you know what, the Christmas is going to happen around my hiding space. So like the Christmas tree was in front of my screen. So I spent the holiday season sitting in my hiding space, you know, with the tree like as a buffer. So it's now my favorite space in the house. It's where I can just sit and be quiet and be grateful. I feel like everyone needs that.
It's very interesting what you have to offer, because our parents, for example, they are in a situation where I'm sure when you're growing up, you can see that your mom, she has a kitchen as a private sanctuary. And now all those are so blurred out because I don't know whether you cook with your husband or the children are in there with you cooking together and so forth. So there's really no private sanctuary. The previous generation has, the guys have the garage, the wives has the kitchen, no one goes in there, or the sewing room or whatever. And now it's all wide open. What's yours is mine. Mine is yours, and that's it. It's over.
It's true. It's true. Yeah, I find the concept of a man cave fascinating. It's like I need a this is my woman cave.
There you go. Right, right. Very much so. What is the most life-changing experience you have ever had?
The most life-changing experience I've ever had. Let's see. Well, apart from having my kids, which we talked a bit about, I did have an experience that brought out a lot for me. I recently went on a trip to Costa Rica without my family, and this was the craziest thing I've ever done. I won this trip online. I won it on the internet. And that sounds completely insane. I mean, like, what kind of mother leaves her children to go to Costa Rica for a trip that she won on the internet? It's like my judgment is highly suspect. But it was run by Costa Rica Expeditions, which is a wonderfully reputable travel company. Mm-hmm. And the winners of the trip came from all across the country. And it all just happened this way, but we were in different phases of our life. So one participant was recently married, no kids, and then there was me, and then someone with a daughter in her 20s, and then someone with teenage kids, and someone whose kids are grown and out. And for me to be taken out of my natural environment, where pretty much all the time I know what I'm doing, you know, I have lots of things I need to do for lots of people, and my responsibilities, my job description is very clear. For me to be taken away from that for 5 days, I was really terrified. I didn't know what I would do with myself, like, what thoughts would I think? During the course of that week, I confronted lots of fears. We were in the rainforest, and so if camping scares me, I mean, hiking in the rainforest was its own brand of terror. And meeting all these strangers, and, you know, I talk a lot about being attentive and being available to people, but in our everyday lives, it's easy to get caught with what do I have in common with you? And so unless you're another mom with kids my age, what do we have left to talk about? Or unless you're really into yoga, what do we have to talk about? And on this trip, it was all strangers who had little in common until you got to talk with them a lot. So it was very mind expanding for me in that way. It made me stretch in a lot of different directions, and it made me ask the question, apart from what I do, who am I? And what came out of that was this feeling that at my heart, I am a pretty happy person with a lot of potential. And with that potential is, you know, a lot of unknown, a lot of where is it going to go and how is it going to turn out. And when I was a kid, I used to always want to skip ahead to the end of a book to find out what was going to happen, because it was very excruciating to not know. And so here we are in that yogic moment again. You know, it's like kicking up to handstand. How is it going to turn out? What's going to come of me? And being able to enjoy that the not knowing, the, you know, I can't wait to see.
Very interesting. What do you hope facing 40 upside down does for others?
The best news I can ever get from someone from the blog is to hear them say, you know what, I did it. I made a secret hiding place for myself. A friend of mine said, I live in a 900-square-foot apartment with my husband and two kids. Is there any hope for me? Like, can I get any space for myself?
Right.
And I said, you know what? Your family is going to have to learn how to live in 898 square feet. And so she did it. She made a little serenity space for herself. And I can't wait to see pictures. I'm waiting to get pictures from her. My sister started taking swim lessons. She said, you know, if you can learn how to dive, I can become a better swimmer. There are a lot of people who have said, you know, I've always wanted to. I've been a little afraid to try. Do you think I can? And then the resounding answer from the Facing 40 Upside Down community is, yes, do it. Do
right.
it.
Right.
So that's what I hope. I hope that it helps people laugh at themselves and, you know, support each other and reach out to other people so that if you ever feel lonely, if you ever feel disheartened, to feel that there are lots of other people there who would love to, you know, give you a big virtual hug and pat on the back. And that if you try something, no matter how it ends up, it's like we all love you for trying.
Where can someone go to read your blog, get more information about you, and keep up with your latest happenings?
Okay, so if you're on Facebook, you can look up Facing 40 Upside Down, and the 40 is spelled out with an S. My blog address, get a pen. It's Upside Down Patty, but there are hyphens in between. So it's Upside hyphen Down hyphen Patty, and Patty is spelled with a Y, so it's P-A-T-T-Y, and then .blogspot.com.
Okay. Repeat the Facebook one again, and we'll do the same thing for your Blogspot, so that everyone can write it down. Yeah.
Sure, yes. Everyone deserves a second chance. So on Facebook, if you just look up Facing 40 Upside Down, you'll get to my fan page. So click like, and then you'll get all of my updates. And the website for the blog itself is upside-down-patty, spelled with a Y, so P-A-T-T-Y, at blogspot.com.
Great. How has writing your blog impacted you personally?
Writing my blog has made me more courageous, and that's not a word I ever would have used to describe myself. I think that once you declare something, like we just came through this this new year, and you're saying it's new year, new you. New Year's resolutions never stuck for me. Like I would say to myself, okay, I'm going to really try hard to be more this way. And by March, forget it. You know, I was that way. I was the way I'd always been. But I think it's different if you declare it. You know, resolving to do something yourself on your own is hard. Declaring it publicly and saying, I am going to try. You know, so you're not saying that it's absolutely going to happen by this date, but I am going to try. I'm going to take the first steps, and whatever it takes, what the help I need to get, I'm going to get. The resources I need to get into place, I'm going to get into place. And then I'm just going to do it as best as I can and maximize my chances of success and then tell you about it. Then you'll do it. Then it becomes serious. You know, that's why we have written contracts. So for me, it has made me much more a person of my word. And when you're raising kids, that's what you want. You want your kids to be able to see that if you make a commitment, that you're going to do absolutely everything you can to live up to it. So I think it's made me more of a, you know, less of a difficult to pin down person and more of someone that you can really count on.
What I'm hearing also is that by journaling, it forces you to put your thoughts on paper. And it becomes more concrete in some ways.
Absolutely.
And then, of course, in this case, you have created a community to help each other out. And tell us a little bit more about that.
I meet so many people who say, oh, I have these great ideas. And when you work in book publishing, you realize that everyone has a story that they want to tell. You know,
right.
Everyone has something that they want to remember and spread the word on and publish in some way. And sometimes you can be very inhibited by your own insecurity and by your own, you know, feelings of, is this that interesting? Is it, you know, for me, I always felt like, who would really be interested in this anyway? You know, is it only just interesting to me? Is anyone listening? But the truth is, you're never going to know if you don't write it down. Like,
right.
If it's all in your head, it's not doing anyone any particular good, and unless you have a steel trap memory that's never going to forget it, if you just keep it in there, you might lose it. So I tell people to pour it out, like write it all down, and maybe out of everything you write, there will be one memory that you think, yes, I really want to keep this. I want my kids to remember this. I want the grandkids to remember this. Bookmark it, save it. There may be one thing that you feel like, oh, my gosh, this community would love to hear about it. And if I get it out on this blog or if I submit it to this newspaper, you know, then it'll reach people who really need to hear it. You may end up with a book contract. You may end up with a talk show. You may end up, you know, like, who knows where things will lead. But until you put it down, nothing's going to happen. So, yes, I totally believe in journaling. I totally believe in writing. It clarifies things, and instead of just having life happen to you, you can start to sift through your life and see, you know, what's the treasure, what's the thing that I can take away from this and can help my life in the future, my kids, and everyone else that I come into contact with.
Very interesting. The way you're looking at things from a different perspective, and that's very good. A lot of times, too, I believe that if you keep everything in your mind is a creator, so you constantly change that. But once you put it down on paper, it's finite. And it gives you the opportunity to say, okay, that's it. I mean, I'm not saying that you cannot change it or refine it, so to speak, but you tend to do a lot more refinement while it's still embedded in your head. Because every time when you bring it up and you say, you know, let me do it this way, let me do it that way, and it's just not quite as concrete as it is if it's on paper, so to speak.
Yes, you know, when we were in the rainforest, we literally almost walked into a crocodile. And there was much debate over how large the crocodile actually was. And someone in our group was like, I'm telling my friends it was 10 feet long.
Right.
I think the actuality was more like seven, like six or seven or something. So, yes, in your memory, things can definitely change and expand. if you have a journalist with you at the time writing down the facts, that can sometimes keep people honest.
It's true, because our mind will continually create something. One day we're gung-ho, we know we can climb Mount Everest. The next day we're not so excited about it, and it just might be a little up in upstate New York or something, you know. So it changes very quickly. What can we expect from you in 2011?
Well, there are a few things that I'm excited to take on in 2011. I had the privilege, and I know you have as well, of meeting Swami Ratanath.
Yes.
The author of The Journey Home, and he's a great Swami and teacher. And we talked a bit about the idea of pilgrimage, because he took an extraordinary pilgrimage to discover himself across Europe and the Middle East. And I've been feeling like, you know, a lot of the people who I have daily interactions with do not have the opportunity to take a pilgrimage. Our responsibilities are too great. We have to stay where we are, and we want to stay where we are. But does that mean that, you know, your spiritual quest needs to die with that dream? Or are there ways, you know, to have a sense of discovery, a sense of trying to find what's deeper, what's hidden within, while keeping our daily lives? So that's a question that I'd really like to explore. In a concrete way, I want to make my secret hiding place larger so that the rest of my house isn't complete chaos. I want to be able to find my desk. I want to be able to see my floor. My kids, I'm yelling at them, don't step on that, it's my work. And they're saying, well, why is it on the floor? So, yes, I would like to tackle that. And I want to leave myself open as well, you know, leave myself open to the unexpected, because that's always where the most tremendous learning lies, is the stuff you don't imagine happening.
Fantastic. By the way, we're coming close to the end of the show. Do you have a recipe for living you would like to share with all our listeners this morning?
Make it up as you go along. No, with a couple of caveats. So my husband and I used to watch this show, and now I'm not going to remember the name of it. Oh, it's called Ready, Set, Cook, the contestants would be handed $10 worth of groceries, and they wouldn't know what was in the bag, and they'd have to make a great meal out of it in 30 minutes, something like that. And it was ridiculous. It would be like, and here's an artichoke and some smoked salmon and, you know, ramen noodles, and they'd have to make something great. And so that's what life is like, you know. It's like you don't know what is going to come home every day. You don't know what you're going to walk into when you step out of your car. And it's to not feel like, ugh, ramen noodles, I have to just get through this, you know, another meal. It's to think creatively, what could I bring to this? They would have a readily stocked pantry, and so think about what you would stock your pantry with. You know, what are your go-to things to give you energy, to give you hope, to give you a smile on your face so that when you see the ramen noodles, you can make something really great out of it? You know, the wisdom that people have given you, the encouragement that people have given you. Who would you want to have in the kitchen with you? Who would you pick up the phone and call? What am I going to do with these noodles? So I think that's the approach that I would take, is that you improvise, but you draw on your own strengths, you draw on your own experience, and you're not afraid of trying different things, of trying new things.
That's a fantastic recipe, to be honest with you. I mean, that's great. I mean, you incorporate food with recipe for living, and true recipe for living. That's fantastic. Patty, thank you for the great recipe for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be entrepreneur, author, and lecturer Yudana Power. As a dynamic visionary, she has inspired many with her rags to richness and then to rags and even bigger richness story. Yudana and I will be discussing about her life's journey from starring opposite Katharine Hepburn on Broadway to her current mission of sharing her expertise in choosing and starting the right home-based business for you. For additional information about this show, future shows, and to receive a free recipe for living, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. Thank you for listening. Have a great week. Patty, thank you again, and have a great day.
I loved every minute. Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you. Bye-bye.